On this episode of MacBreak Weekly, Andy Anatko, Alex Lindsay, Renee Ritchie, and I are all going to talk about all things Apple, including they're getting rid of Aperture, but it sounds like Siri's going to get a lot better. And which size should the new iPhone be? All that and more coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 409, recorded Tuesday, July 1st, 2014. A little less fur. This episode of MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Harry's, for guys and girls who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now. Go to harrys.com. Get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code MacBreak when you check out. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out where your used iPhone, iPad, and other Apple products are worth at gazelle.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome to MacBreak Weekly, episode 409. Leo Laporte is on the island of Maui, Hawaii, having a wonderful little vacation time off. So they asked me to step in and host this episode of MacBreak Weekly, which I haven't done in about a year since I think Leo went on vacation last time. So hopefully I didn't screw up so badly that they had nobody else to ask. But anyway, we're going to have a great show. Of course, I've got a wonderful panel, all the regulars. We've got to my left, Andy Anatko. Hello, Andy.
Hello, Sarah. How lovely to see you here.
Well, how lovely to see you. And what do we have behind you? A chorus lion and a rodent.
Squirrels are not rodents. They are part of their own taxonomical class. But it was the good spot on a chorus lion. I made the mistake of realizing that there's a lot of like Broadway on Google Play Music, and then I wound up having to listen to the entire thing of a chorus line. And once you get to the end, that's pretty much your day for the rest of the day. You're vacuuming, but you have to do the walk like as you're vacuuming. So I got to purge this from my system, but then we'll be okay. There'll be very little mournful singing about the things I gave up to pursue my passion during this show. I expect by the second commercial break, I'll have that out of my system.
Excellent. Well, it's lovely to look at. We've got a little of everything, including a little maple leaf mug. And to my right, we've got Alex Lindsay, who is coming all the way from Rwanda. Hey, Alex.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. So what's going on out in Rwanda? I know you go there fairly often, the African tour of duty,
there is the celebration of the 20th anniversary of the end of the genocide. So the Independence Day, essentially, the 20th anniversary since the end of the genocide. So we're going to be doing live streaming tomorrow morning with some youth programs at one of the hotels here, and then we're streaming from Amahoro Stadium, which is, if you know anything about the Rwandan genocide, that was one of the big stadium that was the safe haven. So anyways, we're streaming from Rwanda, from Amahoro Stadium on Friday, and so I'm here working with our local Rwandan crew to just kind of back them up, but they're mostly have taken over at this point, so they're running the whole show.
Wow, that's excellent. Well, thanks for joining us. It seems like it's good work you're doing. And then, of course, this is such good timing because I know it's like a special Canada Day. We've got Renee Ritchie, of course, of iMore and of MacBreak Weekly as well. Hey, Renee.
Hey, Sarah. It's great to have you on the show again.
Well, it's great to be here. And thanks for, not protesting. And it is Canada Day, right? It's like a big deal.
It is, absolutely. It is a confederation. It's got some official name, like Confederation Day, when all 12 provinces, the massive number of provinces, signed up to be a country.
Well, happy Canada Day to you. Is there anything that we can do here on our end to celebrate in an appropriate way?
No, I said at the beginning, Chad's hair being serge red all day, I think, is tribute enough.
Perfect. Chad, thanks for helping us celebrate Canada Day.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta do it for the best country that's above the United States that there is. So
America's hat.
Woohoo!
That's right. And a fine hat indeed. A fine hat. So, all right, well, let's talk about some of our, I guess, top Apple news. What do we all think about Apple saying, well, we're not going to keep developing Aperture in OS X? We all heard at WWDC that the new Photos app was going to basically be the successor to iPhoto, but it sounds like it's going to be the successor to Aperture as well, which I guess means that it is more of a pro tool than anything that we've seen before on the OS X side. But I don't know, Andy, were you a big Aperture user?
Yeah, I mean, I spend more time in Aperture having fun than gaming or watching movies, probably. It's just such a slick app for turning the photo that your camera shot into the photo that is the scene as you remembered it. So I, like most people who are using Aperture, kind of disappointed that for the past couple of years we haven't seen any movement from it. I'm being not a pro, I wasn't really tempted to move to Lightroom yet. So it's not as though it was something that people were not expecting, but you're still sad once the shoe drops. But I'm not sure if it's necessarily that Photos is going to replace Aperture. I think I wrote a column about this a few days ago when the news finally hit, that it's possible that Apple has another app that is a replacement for Aperture, but they're not ready to announce it yet. Or it's possible that they simply think that because Photos is so extensible, someone can come in and write an extension that can deliver Aperture style editing into the Photos app. Or it's possible they're just saying that, look, we're totally redoing Photos for Mac OS. Photos is not just a replacement for iPhoto. It's not just your photo library. It is going to be the resource that's going to deliver photos everywhere that every app and every user wants it on every device, no matter whether you're using mobile or desktop. So it's possible that Apple is just saying that we're going to retract our responsibility to just making sure that any app that works with Photos can get their hands on whatever photo the user wants to start working with. And so we're going to leave that as an opportunity for others. I mean, do remember that Apple never got around to creating their own version of Photoshop. So just because they're not doing a pro app for Photos doesn't mean they don't care about it. But still, yeah, I'm wondering if it's time to finally start taking advantage of that part of my Adobe Creative Studio subscription now. Yikes.
Well, Alex, I know you do a lot with professional photography. I mean, was Aperture ever enough of a program for you?
Yeah, no, I actually have been using Aperture almost since day one. So since day one. and that's where most of my apps are. I've got 100,000 photos or something in there. Or media files. And, you know, there have been some stability issues that have actually had me a little concerned about the, about Aperture in general. So I haven't been sure if that's where I was going to stay. I'm going to wait to see Photos before I decide what I'm going to do. I think that there's a lot of, it's hard to see until we see it, but I don't know if I'm using Aperture even heavy enough that if there's a lot of those features get put into Photo, and I wouldn't say that I'm pushing Aperture very hard for the corrections that I do. I think that they could definitely put most of that into Photos and I'd probably be pretty happy. Anytime I want to do anything serious, I move to Photoshop anyway. So it's not been that big of a deal. Maybe I should be in Lightroom. I don't know. Many of my friends are. I'm still trying to figure that out. I think that I'll be interested to see it before I make a decision. I also think that there's still an opportunity for Apple to make it extensible enough that people could start adding a lot of plugins and so on and so forth and open up that API to a point where people could actually do something really useful, like replace some of the functionality of Photoshop. So there's a lot of opportunity there right now.
I guess I'm probably one of those, well, I know there's a few of me, but I almost do all of my photo taking on my iPhone and then my photo editing on my iPhone. I'm never really an iPhoto. I don't even know if I've ever used Aperture. I've probably looked at it here and there, but you know, I'm not even sure what my options are going forward or what my best option is. Renee, obviously, you know at least what we are to expect from the new Photos app. Is it something that you think is going in the right direction for Apple? Do they just want to move away from this sort of pro photography universe that they know don't appeal to a lot of people?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think for a while now, the writing on the wall was fairly clear that Apple didn't care about pro user features as much as they cared. I mean, sorry, power user features as much as they cared about empowering user features. They wanted to make apps starting with iMovie, starting with Final Cut Pro, even Logic Pro 10 to some extent, that were accessible to a wider range of people, sort of the growing prosumer market, which is this huge middle ground in between brand new people to the platform and pros. And I, like Alex and Andy, I've been using Aperture for a long time, but I've been using Photoshop for decades. So my biggest Aperture action is right-click, edit in Photoshop. I just used Aperture because I liked the way that it organized things, and I didn't like the workflow that Lightroom tries to impose on me. I didn't need Lightroom specifically. So I think this move, one of the biggest complaints I've heard over and over again is that iPhoto just wasn't enough. It had okay features, but it wasn't really what everybody wanted. It wasn't that sophisticated. And now it looks like we're getting the 80% of the stuff that Aperture does really well put into the new Photos app. And yeah, the 20% that power users really wanted won't be there, but they do have other options now. And I think Apple is always better served when they're sort of democratizing computing technology. And that looks like what Photos is going to do again.
Yeah.
I definitely think that Apple is always, I mean, we've talked about this in the past, but Apple's really like, what will 90% of the people need 90% of the time? And I think that what we get with Photos is probably Apple's assumption of that necessity. And I think that they're quite happy to lose the other 10% to Lightroom if they need to.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's also interesting to think about what kind of future iWork might have, given that it was really created so that Apple would have a plan B if Microsoft ever decided to sort of ease back on development of Microsoft Office. Now that that's not really an issue for them, maybe a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, we'll have exactly the same thing. We'll have a year and a half or 2 years of no serious updates. And then they'll, after sort of encouraging, instead of kicking people out of the nest, the mama bird just doesn't come back to the nest very often. And then after a year, the baby birds decide that, okay, I guess mom's not coming back. Damn it, we'll have to leave now and go find our own food from now on. So this is, I think, maybe Apple's best way of encouraging people to not rely on them for the real hard stuff.
Well, shall we move on to, this is actually really, did everybody read the story in TechPinions about understanding a wearable strategy that might point to how they're doing things at Disney theme parks?
Yeah, I read that. And that's exactly the sort of, these Disney theme park bands are exactly the way that I imagine Apple wanting to do a wearable. Because if you just have a band that is just a sensor that can make magical things happen with the hardware around you, even if one of the limiting things that it does is you wear it and suddenly you don't even have to bother to thumbprint unlock a phone anymore. Or now you're in a store and now simply your presence there in the store gives you access to your Starbucks account, lets you pay. That's worth a certain amount of money. And the other big advantage of a system like that is that if you're not building a huge, giant touchscreen device, you're building something that people will actually want to wear, which is a good thing if you're trying to sell these things. And you're also building something that you can sell cheaply, which is another thing that if you're trying to get people to break their to create a brand new habit of here's a new addition to the things that I do after I jump out of the shower every morning. Not only do I get my wallet, my watch, and my good pen, but now I also strap on this sensor. So it's good stuff. It isn't exactly, I think, what Apple would do with such a technology, but it really does point the way to Apple creating something that they can sell as opposed to something that they can demo in June and hope people don't ask about the sales figures for by September.
For anybody who hasn't read this, it's a post by Tim Bajarin. I hope that's how you
Bajarin.
Bajarin. And he took his family to Disney World. And he said, I mean, this it worked like, you know, it went off without a hitch. You connect a band to a credit card that you're supposed to use at parks. You've got a PIN number that you're using for shops and restaurants. You can use your wristband once you're wearing it to get into your room if you're staying in, you know, at a Disney hotel instead of a key card. The wristbands came to the house a couple weeks before the vacation, so I guess as long as you book ahead of time. And then they're using RFID radios to communicate with door locks and restaurant terminals, the park entrance gates. You sync your bands to a fingerprint reader for double authentication, if that's what you want to do. You can use them at kiosks and various restaurants on the Disney properties. I mean, it does sound like, as long as you don't mind wearing a wristband, it is the ultimate inconvenience, and you don't have to think about too much. Now, of course, that's within a Disney park, and that's not where most people live.
Magical world.
Well, and I think that there's another step that I think that we'll see in places like Disney, which is being able to have those wristbands on your kids and being able to know where your kids are. And that is, you know, as a father of a 4 and a 6 year old, that is a constant concern of where they actually are at a park like that. And at Disneyland, they're probably as safe as they can be. But still, it's something that I think they're going to see in shopping malls. I think we're going to see in Chuck E. Cheese. You know, being able to put a wristband on your kid and know precisely where they are. And with Bluetooth LE, we should be able to pinpoint their position within a foot. And believe me, within a foot is very important in some of these locations.
The
thing that I think is really interesting is when Apple is at their best when they try to solve problems. What is the problem with current wearables? What's the problem with mobile that you actually have to go to wearable? And it seems like we're falling into these distinct categories, like the projection of notifications, the logging of information, you know, like exercise tracking and things like that. Things like authentication with Bluetooth trusted object or RFID and things like that. There's several tasks that they can be good at. Apple is also usually good at focusing on one or two of those. They don't try to be too broad. And I very much like this idea of things just happen, because the biggest advances in computing happen with advances in interface. Like multi-touch made all the difference when it came to mobile devices. The previous technologies, keyboards, resistive, just wasn't as good. And multi-touch let more and more people use them. And I think we're going to need a similar advance in wearables, something like proximity, where things magically happen when you're within the right place and you have the right sort of permissions. And that will probably make them much more useful than just another current generation screen on a device.
Do we think we're going to see an Apple wrist device? I don't even want to call it an iWatch because I don't know if that's what it's going to be called. But is that going to happen this September or October? Or you think?
October. Yeah.
I can bet some money on it because I want this. Yeah. I've finally put away my hopes for an Apple television. I'm just not even going to think about that anymore. So I need to believe in something new.
Well, I think we're going to see some. I don't know if we're going to see an Apple television as an LED or LCD, but I do think we're going to see a new update to Apple TV, whatever that is, where we're going to get a lot more features and so on and so forth. But I do think a wearable makes sense, and I think the more we look at these wearables, the idea that you're constantly connecting to things around you to make your life more convenient, I think, is probably going to be the thrust, and I think Apple's going to do that probably pretty well.
Yeah, and we're coming right after, the first show we've done after, talk at length after the Google I.O. keynote, I think. I don't think we've talked much about the wearables that they've done. And the only thing that really occurred to me that's relevant to Apple is that the Samsung and the LG Android Wear watches really makes me think about the differences between the way that Google does things and the way that Apple does things, where I think that Google made a watch that is feature complete, that does really far-reaching, broad things. That's first day out the door, and then they're going to take a couple of years to get the hardware right. I think Apple's tack would be to do the exact opposite, which is to get the hardware right out the gate, make it feature incomplete, but in 2 years start building in the features that you associate with a wearable device.
Does anyone here use iTunes U much, the app? I love it, and yet I find that it sort of sits dormant on my iPad, not being used, even though I can basically take free college classes. The reason I'm asking, of course, is because Apple had announced an iTunes U update. We talked about it on iPad Today yesterday, that allows you to create more things from the iPad itself rather than just participating in classes, and a little bit more sort of back-channel discussions, but is anybody using iTunes U on a regular basis, or do you know anybody who is?
I got to say that, like, the iTunes U on my iPad is like having a copy of A Brief History of Time on my coffee table. I have it. I'm proud of myself for having it. I want other people to think that I use it, but no, I haven't cracked that a lot. I'm just not that bright.
And it's something that you know, we're looking at actually implementing it for the school here, actually, to run most of our education. And we just haven't really gotten it working the way we exactly wanted it and the authoring to the level that we wanted it to work at. But we're going to make another pass at it based on this upgrade, you know, for the fall. So we're going to take a look at it. We are excited about the idea. We just haven't found the solution completely compelling yet.
So, Alex, from your end, you would want to be able to conduct classes and have people follow along with, you know, a syllabus through iTunes U.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of our stuff is self-paced. So what we do is the only time we're in a class is when we're discussing stuff that they've already done. So they're given, there are some ones where we're kind of showing things around if we're actually in a studio. We use a lot of Google Plus Hangouts to connect Rwanda to our to Petaluma. And so we have those classes about once or twice a week. But then the rest of the time is spent, you know, doing videos and so on and so forth. And so one of the things we're going to be ramping up to over 200 students this fall, and managing that is going to be mostly training videos that are then followed up with challenges and discussions about those processes. And so for that, we think that especially with some of the new features here, this could be a good solution for it. We are trying to figure out what platform we're going to roll that out on. And right now, it's probably the inside track is using iTunes U.
I think one of the strangest things about iTunes U is, you know, and sort of looking at it on my iPad now, is it's not laid out very well. There's a lot there, but it's almost like if the App Store was even worse at finding, being able to navigate through and find the apps that you want based on the exact name of the app. That's kind of how I feel about iTunes U. And that's, I think, why I check it out and I go, oh, wow, cool. I could be part of this course on the history of rock and roll that Ohio University, the University of, you know which one I'm talking about, is just going to give me for free. And then I don't really understand how to navigate it very well. So I think that's one of the issues. And perhaps this update will make it easier for all of us.
All the ones I found is because somebody linked to it. Like, I saw a link to the Stanford iOS developers course, for example, and I followed that link and got there. But I've never even considered using it as a browsing to discover new things.
Yeah, which is too bad. I was going to say that there's so many gems inside there that, like Renee, I'm so entertained and amazed by when people send me a link to something that, oh my goodness, I can actually learn about this in a self-paced way and it's free. I wish that it were more like the App Store, where it was easy to simply have my attention called to something that the store thinks that I might find interesting. Because again, it is like the first time you get that library pass that gets you into the stacks and you get to see, wow, popular photography from 1972 through 1988, or these gems that this has been here all the time. Why wasn't I informed?
That's actually really interesting, because the way Apple works internally is that there are store managers and then there's editorial people. There's an App Store editorial or an iTunes Store editorial, and there's that for music and movies, and there's that for apps, and there's that even for podcasts. I don't know if there's editorial team for iTunes U, or if there is, maybe it's one person or two people. And maybe ramping up on editorial would be a way to help people discover the best stuff.
Yeah, I would like to see iTunes U set up is like the App Store, where it's, hey, here are the best science classes of this semester. Or if you're looking to get into coding, these would be the places, great courses to start. I don't see a lot of that curation going on. It would be nice to know who are the people that are curating, because clearly, even if you have an issue with the way the iTunes is laid out, I mean, there are people who are putting apps front and center, deciding which app is going to be free for the day or the week.
It's always felt like on the App Store and the iTunes. You've been interrupted twice. Alex, why don't you go ahead?
Well, I also think that it's very hard. It takes a special person to be able to do self-paced training. That's always a difficulty that we see across the board, because we build a lot of this stuff. And, you know, having something you can do with a lot of people, I think, in finding ways to do that is really important. I think one of the other challenges is, in a lot of ways, building an online support for real-time classrooms is, this is going to be sacrilegious to say for a lot of people, is kind of building into the past, because the way we run classrooms right now is not the way we're going to run them 10 years from now, you know, as we really start using technology and not just kind of try to use it to kind of brace the old-fashioned way of teaching people. And so I think we're just trying to fit a square peg into a round hole.
Andy, I know you wanted to say something before we move on.
I think Apple's missing a trick, because they've always used the App Store as though the things that are content in the App Store and in the iTunes Store are valuable in and of themselves, and they make money when people download music and when they download movies and stuff like that. But I really think that iTunes U is there to sell iPads by the hundreds to schools and universities. So I think the way that part of the store operates reflects the fact that it doesn't really pay for Apple to let civilians into this library. They're certainly welcome to come in and check it out, but why would Apple? I think the thinking is, why should they spend a lot of time, effort, and money and personnel into helping people who can't do a purchase order for 500 iPads get access to this content and find interesting things?
Well, should we take a break? I think that makes sense. Chad, do you think this is a good time for that? He says thumbs up. Thumbs up from the TD desk. All right, well, let's take a moment then to thank Harry's for sponsoring this episode of Mac Break Weekly. It's always funny because people say, "Ooh, Harry's, yeah, that's good for guys." And I'm like, excuse me, it can be good for girls too. Or, you know, whoever would like a little bit less fur on their body, wherever that might be. Harry's is, what are you laughing at? You know what I meant. Everybody's got it. You know, there's varying degrees of how furry people want to be. They're a fairly new advertiser here on the Twit Network. You might know exactly what they do, but if you don't, I will tell you, they are making it much easier and much more affordable to have quality razors. They will deliver these razors to you, to your address of choice. So you don't have to go into the Walgreens or the CVS or wherever you're getting your razors now and then have to like track down somebody who works there because they've locked up the razors because people steal them because razors are way overpriced. They're crazy. I don't care what kind of razor you have. If you're getting them from a drugstore, you're paying way too much. The Gillettes and the everybody, they've jacked up the price so much that it really doesn't make a lot of sense anymore. And the folks who started Harry's, Andy and Jeff, knew that there was a better way to give people a great shaving experience at a fraction of the cost. It's minimal, but it's nice stuff. You got in your Harry's box, you got your razor, you've got your replacement razors, a nice shave cream. I mean, I even like the packaging. The whole thing is lovely. Plus a little shave guide, a little extra information about how Harry's was started. This might sound somewhat familiar to you. Warby Parker is another sponsor. They sponsor Twit. And this is actually the same model because Jeff, one of the co-founders, also founded Warby Parker. That's the eyewear brand. The idea is the razor model emphasizes good design, craftsmanship, value, and it's a lot like that sunglass market, another area where things are way marked up for no reason. So if you want to go to harrys.com and get, let's say an engraved set, you can say, send me 12 blades. Here's how many I need. These are, how often I go through razors, 3 creams every 5 months. There you go. They let you know what your price is going to be. And then you're just in the system. It gets shipped to your door. The set is lovely. Again, it's minimal, but it's very nice. And the price is just way better than what you would get if you were to go ahead and buy all of these items individually. And you don't have to go anywhere. You never have to go get razors again. I just had a friend who's in Europe have a bunch of razors delivered to me here at Twit to put in my suitcase to bring to her because she's desperate. She doesn't know where she's got. She doesn't know where to buy razors anymore. Now she had Harry's. She'd be fine. She should have done that ahead of time. Here's what you do. Go to harrys.com. That's harrys.com. And use the promo code MACBREAK and you'll get $5 off your first purchase. That's harrys.com. Promo code MACBREAK. And we thank Harry's for their support of Mac Break Weekly. Is anyone excited about Apple's CarPlay? If so, it's coming to 9 new automakers that include Alfa Romeo, because I know we've all got one of those. Audi, Dodge, Jeep, Mazda, Ram. I know CarPlay is supposed to be integrated into the kind of car that I have. It isn't yet, so I like the idea in theory, but it's not as if there's been any real world experimentation I can do with CarPlay. What does everybody think about the future of this?
We're holding off for Lamborghini, Sarah.
You're what?
Holding off for Lamborghini still.
Oh yes, of course, right.
Yeah. I'm holding off for Ferrari myself. I think the issue here is that I know that for me on a day to day basis, the quality of the connection between my iPhone and my car would make much more of a difference than how the performance or many of the other little doodads that they add to the car, because that's something I'm doing every day. I have an older car that doesn't integrate with my phone, and I'm very bitter about it. And I may actually eventually replace it or put some kind of weird wiring in it because I can't, it drives me absolutely crazy that I can't connect my phone. And so, and when I rent cars and they have them, I realize how nice that is. And so I think that definitely as I buy a new car, how this integrates with Android or our iPhone is going to be a very big decision factor. And I think that's what a lot of people are betting on.
Yeah, I agree. I vastly prefer having a car mount for my phone because I'm kind of picky about where the phone is in relation to my eyes and the steering wheel. But I'm certain that I'm not in the majority of it. I'm not sure if someone would pick one car over another based on phone integration, though, because people actually care more about where the cup holder is. Then do they have the right phone? How do they connect the phone to the center console? What apps do they have that can exploit that center console? It's a nice feature if you discover it 1 or 2 years into your ownership of this car, but I'm not sure that that's going to steer a decision. I am very, very cheered by the information over the past week, ever since Google came out with their own car dash scenario, that there are multiple makers that have announced an intention to support both Apple and the Android system. Because as the former owner of a car that had a center dash stereo that could not be replaced, because Ford decided that, hey, we've got a great, what if we made a car stereo that was in the shape of an oval? and you couldn't replace it with anything else that you like later on from Pioneer or everybody else. I know what it's like when you're inside that car and you know that, oh, so this could do something. I could be doing something really wonderful with this phone or this technology that all my friends can do, but I can't because somebody made a stupid marketing decision to bet on one solution to lock out all others. So we'll see how that shakes out. But I'm happy with what I have right now, and I think it's going to take a while for features like this to be part of every car, as opposed to something that you have to get the right model in order to make this work. We're getting there, though. It's just to button up a rambling rant. The other good news after the announcements about these car systems is that it's no longer the Ferrari logo. It's no longer the Audi logo. You actually are seeing this stuff appearing in like the $20,000 Ford cars and GM cars. So long as this becomes something that everybody has access to, that's a win for everybody.
Something that's worked well in a car is the idea of voice control, hands-free. I use Siri a fair amount in my car, and it's, you know, to write down little appointments for myself where I know I'm going to forget by the time I park. But interesting article in Wired that got written up, I guess it was last night, that something called neural network algorithms will be coming to Siri in a big way, making Siri much better. Something that Google has started to use with Android's voice recognition, which is, I don't know about all of you, but Google Now voice recognition is heads and shoulders above anything that Apple can do. I don't know why it has to be so much worse on the iOS side, but
Google invested early on. I mean, they hired the co-founder of Nuance, and you know, he was one of the big patent holders in all this technology, and they've been investing in it heavily. And they do things like putting in natural language and context-aware co-processors. And Apple's still a licensee of Nuance. They're doing more and more to distance themselves or to make it, you know, their own technology, but they're not as far ahead in this. But this is one of my favorite things too. And I use Siri all the time. And in iOS 8, you can say, "Hey Siri," and just start talking. And I use it to dictate, you know, things I don't want to forget, including sometimes entire blog posts while I'm driving. And that to me is the key, because I was watching the Android Auto stuff and I was watching the CarPlay stuff, and especially the variety of control schemes from knobs to resistive screens to capacitive screens. And all of those to me are still very distracting. I still remember being terrified as a kid when my friends would drive around with their heads buried in the push button radio stations to find their favorite songs. And the ability to touch things, even if it's big finger-friendly controls, is still not a lot of attention to me. So again, with that transitioning of interface, I think that getting that to being voice-controlled, sure, you may have kids screaming in the background. It might not always work, but getting as much as possible there is good. And I think it's also important to remember that this is all 1.0 stuff, because things like extensibility and where we're going in the future, where audio is being streamed and audio is being processed, and they're doing neural network connections to it, we're basically using the worst version of this stuff right now, and it's going to be coming better and faster, I think, more quickly.
Yeah, I think that central point is a really good one. I really think that if you're trying to integrate the phone into the car, I hope that these interface makers take more of a smartwatch approach rather than a phone approach, where every time you see one of these, you know, whether it's a Pebble or whether it's an Android Wear device, the idea is to say, well, it doesn't make sense to have a full interface on here. The idea is to put a simple feature, make sure that people can access the most relevant and simplest feature of an app and do it in the simplest way possible. We're not going to give you that full functionality. It would be a very bad thing if the end result of all these phones in the car solutions is to, don't worry, all of your apps, you can have icons on the dashboard, and you can actually use them, and you can actually, we want to encourage you to respond to all of your texts and clear out your get to inbox zero while you're on I-95 at a sprightly 72 miles an hour. I hope that there is a certain level of restraint that says that we will let you terminate we will let you quickly conclude a text, a phone call, quickly answer a text. We will let you switch between entertainment and navigation options, but we are not here to help you to play Angry Birds inside your car by voice command.
We saw Microsoft earlier this year show off neural networking, which I guess is going to be this new term as voice recognition gets really, really smart. Skype Translate, which I believe only works from English to German, or at least that was how it was demonstrated at this point. But I cannot wait for this. I am so excited. Like, I need to make a bunch of friends in other countries who I can't speak the same language as, just so we could have Skype conversations where we don't actually have to learn the other language. It's very fun. But Apple hired one of what's that, Renee?
It's like Star Trek.
Yeah, exactly.
Universal
translator. Very much, yeah. Apple hired Alex Acero, who had been a senior director, or he is now a senior director in Apple's Siri group, but was at Microsoft for almost 20 years researching speech technology. So, you know, that was sort of the catalyst to this article being written in Wired, that Apple is obviously taking this seriously and doesn't want to be left in the dust when it comes to speech recognition that works and is helpful and can give you the answers that you need. Because I agree with you, Renee. I use Siri as much as I can, but I do find that the speech recognition often misunderstands me, and I'm trying to speak as clearly as possible, and it's like, it just needs to be better.
Yeah, it's interesting to see this. I think this is the one really clear two-horse race that Apple and Google have together, because this is speech recognition and voice control is not something where Apple's industrial design can help them in any way, shape, or form. It really comes down to what features can you implement and how well do they work. And so to see these two companies trading off on different underlying technologies and different ways to surface that in a way that's useful to the user, it's a little bit breathtaking, and it really gets down to the basic core competency of developing technology. I agree with you that Android is ahead of Apple right now, but I'm excited to see what they choose to do with Siri as the next logical step.
Biggest problem for me is that, and I used to remember everybody's phone numbers, and now that I have contacts on my phone, I don't remember anybody's phone numbers anymore. I have the same problem with Maps and the same problem with Siri now. No one is, all this stuff is so incredibly convenient, but no one is doing it well enough. Now, no one's doing Maps well enough. No one's doing voice recognition well enough, because the minute it fails, I am completely lost, or I lose my ability to function on the device that I'm trying to use voice control with. And that's the sort of the challenge of this stuff is, yeah, we're going to show you that it's incredibly convenient. You don't have to worry about getting lost anymore. You don't have to worry about not having to touch your phone anymore, but it's got to be rock solid and it's got to be all the time. And we're still in this transitional turbulent period where most of the time it's okay, but still sometimes it's the wrong, exit number on the highway. Sometimes, you ask it to find you a song and it tries to dial somebody's phone number. And each of those things is much worse now because we've gotten so dependent on them. And that's the thing I think they have to take very seriously going forward.
Well, and that's the thing that worries me about the whole Google car without any steering wheel is I just know that I'm going to end up at a dead end running into a construction zone, and there's just nothing I can do other than just sit there.
One of the classic differences for me between Android and iOS was that there is a restaurant that I really, really like that has a sort of a screwed up kind of name, and Siri, it is impossible for me to call and make a reservation at my favorite restaurant by actually speaking the name. It is a comedy act, like who's on first, me trying to say, okay, you don't understand Zaftigs. How about soft eggs? what if I enunciate in terms of English words, and it will always do a search for what it thinks that I have. But really, the basic voice recognition and attaching it to functions is good. What I'm really looking forward to is when both of these systems, iOS particularly, has that agility where it can have a conversation with you. It's annoying to me to try to have to remember, if I want to create an appointment, what order do I have to put this information in to make sure that the system is going to get it and put it in correctly? I want to be able to simply say, okay, make an appointment. Okay, great. What do you want to remember? I have a meeting. I have a meeting with Ted next week. Great. What day? What time? This, that, and the other. Oh, wait. Go back one. I forgot to say that I have to get there 30 minutes early and make those corrections as I go. That's how I think and that's how I talk to people. So if you're having an interface where you're essentially talking to someone, you really have to make that someone be able to have a conversation. That's going to be pretty interesting when they come up with that sort of stuff.
Well, and I think that there's a big jump that I think Google now does to some degree. And I think that a lot of that is contextually really understanding, not just contextually how words fit together, but contextually how they fit together for you. So if you want to say, I have a doctor's appointment, you know, the first thing that, you know, it should be looking at is the six doctors that you work with. and so now, you know, it gets much more accurate because these are the, you know, these are the ones that you're most likely going to say next. Those are the types of things that I think that we're just seeing the front end of as these information gathering systems, you know, start to work. And when we always know where you are, we know where you like to go. You know, those types of things allow it to zero in, because a lot of what makes speech recognition inaccurate is that it has so many variables that it has to solve at one time. As we reduce those variables when we're talking, it can become much more accurate. You know, if you say 1 through 20 and it knows that it's only looking for 1 through 20, you can have all kinds of accents and it will hit it every single time.
That's the interesting thing. If you remember Jeff Hawkins, who was a co-founder of Palm, and he did graffiti and now he's working at Numenta, his thing was always that we'll never be able to teach computers to understand humans, but we can teach humans to do things in a way that's slightly more accessible to computers. And right now I'm willing to change the way that I speak a little bit, because my fear is that if we teach the computers too well and you have Skybox and you have Boston Dynamics, then I'm just bringing the Terminator around quicker.
wouldn't that be a great effect on humanity if we sort of train ourselves to speak clearly and make our intentions very, very obvious?
Yes.
As opposed to, what do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? Like, Bob, would you like to meet at a restaurant on Boylston Street at 7:30 p.m. on Thursday without all that chit-chat, with all that mousing around?
This could actually be Skynet just sneaking up on us, you know, slowly forcing us to conform so that we can be subjugated.
Because Skynet can't figure out how to do this, so the best way is to adapt us. Okay, I'll buy that. As long as I can make restaurant reservations over my phone, that's fine by me.
Speaking of phones, we're getting to the point of the year where a lot of people would hold off on a replacement phone because we are hoping for something more. But Apple did just release a new commercial, which is all sort of geared at the parents of the world, a way to use third-party apps to be a better parent. Chad, do you want to roll that?
I do.
Roll that beautiful.
I really do.
I can't tell you how much I want to roll that now. Sarah.
She went back.
Well, you know, I'm not a parent, but I know people who are. So I can understand how this is all. Yeah, I mean, it's
cute.
Yeah, it's.
All I'm saying is that if I ask my parents, even for my combined Christmas and birthday present for a $200 thing, let alone a $500 iPad, oh boy, they'd still be screaming right now.
Well, the parents all have them in this, I think.
I do think that this is, you know, it's obviously geared towards people who aren't necessarily, you know, they're not techies. It's not like, ooh, it's the cool new thing. It's a... Isn't life complicated? Wouldn't you like to be a better person here?
Yeah, it's a better life.
Have an iPhone.
It's been a while since they've shown, since they've really shown off a commercial that showed off the hardware and the hardware features. It really is all about, here is what it will be like day to day to have this wonderful Apple product in your life. And even to the extent we're going to show off third-party people's engineering and products as opposed to our own.
Yeah, that's been the whole theme of these. This is the more powerful campaign. I started off with the actual ad called More Powerful. Then I did the one called Strength, which was the fitness tracker one. And now it's doing the parenting one. And they're really interesting. I mean, they're very, very human. They use very current music, a lot of visuals, a lot of apps, even sometimes apps that get bought by Google 2 days later. You know, that's the cost of doing this kind of business. And this one, I think, is the most effective to me. I like this one a lot. And if you looked at the new Apple Store signage that started going live today, they're using very similar imagery there, where they're showing, to Andy's point, point, not a phone in a hand, not a piece of hardware, not a separate sort of device, but they're showing it integrated into people's lives. And I think, you know, technology alone is not enough. We believe that was always my favorite Apple ad of the last many years. And I think they're getting back to that storytelling, how these devices can be used and how they can make your lives better.
Have they started making commercials in house? Is this part of the new wave now that they've sort of started to move away from Xiaomi?
The last one was. I don't know if this one is.
Yeah, I'm trying to. I can't remember.
Yeah, and I think that as a father of two small kids, I recognized a lot of the apps and uses there. So, you know, I think that you definitely, you know, integrate that, and it becomes very convenient because, like, you know, as a parent, you are. Things are very chaotic. You've got two little kids running around, and being able to have things much more convenient. Like, you want to have a nice phone, but you have the iPhone, you know, or, you know, you have whatever phone you're using. You know, you want to, you don't have a nice camera. I mean, you have the phone, and that's what you're going to take. The one that they showed with the night cam, you know, reveals a lot about your kids, mostly that you thought your son was making all the trouble, and turns out your daughter was smacking him on side of the head. And it really is an important thing for you to understand about your kids. So I think that it is a very compelling one. I think a lot of these ads that have been coming out lately, showing it contextually in the rest of our lives, have been pretty effective. Because I mean, I definitely recognize stuff that I'm doing that is very related to that. I don't know if I'm a good sample, but I definitely recognize myself.
We did the opposite. I just put the video in the chat room, but we gave the iPod Touch to my two little godchildren and then shot what they do with it. And it's everything from learning with, you know, Duolingo to making iMovies to doing FaceTime and things like that. And it's almost the reverse of this because they're showing what parents can do to enrich the lives of their kids. But this technology is so easily accessible now that you can actually have kids do a ton of stuff on their own. You can fast forward a little bit through that, but it'll... And they are 8 years old and 5 years old, and the amount of stuff that they can actually get done.
Oh, these are your god kids.
Yeah.
Oh, well, they're very cute.
With an iPhone, it's amazing to me. I mean, since they've been using them pretty much since they could sit upright, and now whenever they go on a vacation, they collect photos, they make their own videos. Every night they do their French and their Italian on their iPad, on their iPod Touches. If they have to, they send each other messages, or they do FaceTime if one of their parents aren't around. And it's an incredibly enabling technology for them. My littlest godson, he can read and write a little bit now, but before he could still iMessage back and forth with me just using Siri. He thought it was his best friend. He would just talk to it as though it were a little robot.
You know, speaking of the iPod Touch, Apple has launched a 16 gig iPod Touch, which has a rear camera for $199, which replaces the, I believe it was $249 non-camera iPod Touch. So not only is it cheaper, but it's way better because it actually has that nice camera. Yeah, and more colorful too, and has dropped the price on the 32 and 64 gig iPod Touch models to $249 and $299 respectively. It must be $229 then for this new model, or $199, which is replacing the two. Anyway, yeah. They're a lot cheaper. And when I first saw this, I thought, I mean, really, Apple? Who even cares about the iPod Touch anymore? But it's kids. It's perfect for kids. You don't have to have some sort of a complicated cellular plan. And as you said, Renee, it's not stopping them from using it to its full potential.
Yeah, well, it's kids, it's travelers, it's developers.
Yeah, we as a production unit, we use the iPod. We have a lot of iPod Touches because they're the cheapest thing that we can use, that we can connect, and basically put them under cameras to give, you know, to send feedback, put countdown clocks, and we don't use more than, you know, we never use more than 8 megs on these things. There's a whole slew of them, and they have all kinds of little tools that we use, and you'll see little ones like just kind of propped up, you know, in a lot of different places for us to have real-time feedback, and they're really cheap and really convenient. And I keep a bunch of them in a little bag and put them up when we're doing productions. And so as little heads-up displays, they are very, very effective. And I think a lot of people use them in kind of odd ways like that, in addition to giving kids. So having them cheaper is great for us.
Kind of weird how they announced it, though, isn't it? It's not that it's such a big update that it mandated its own event, but I can't help but wonder why they didn't hold off for a couple of months until they could until they could just slip it into an iTunes event in September and do it that way.
I think that I think in a lot of ways, Apple has gotten very focused on what they really want to push in these events, and they want to shorten those events. I mean, we can all remember these three-hour events that, you know, you'd be sitting in the middle of the room trying to figure out when you were going to, you know, get out of the room in the middle of the room, you know, I think that them shortening these events and taking these other things are things that are improving things, but they're not revolutionary. The only time we want to talk about something is when, maybe not revolutionary, but when we're really moving our product line forward, we want to keep you focused on that and not give you the kitchen sink, which is, I think, something that we, not too many years ago, we felt like we were getting every single time they did these events.
And there's a pattern, too, because they did the 128 gigabyte iPad. They did the refresh to the MacBook Air. They did the iTunes U thing. They did the iPod Touch. And I think what's happening is that they're becoming a just-in-time company. As soon as they can put out that iPad at the price point and the margins they want, they put out that press release. As soon as the iPod Touch is viable, they do that. And I don't know if it portends anything about what we'll see this September, because previously the iPod Touch has gotten very little attention over the last months and years, and it might have just been a press release then. But if they have something more interesting to announce, then at least this gets it far out of the way, so it doesn't even become part of the story this fall.
You know, going back to the iPhone, the upcoming iPhone, whatever it may be called number-wise, expected to be larger. The latest stories are 4.7-inch and 5.5-inch models, depending on how big you like your phone. But it's kind of an interesting poll conducted by RBC Capital Markets. They said they polled 4,000 consumers asking, what do you want out of a phone? Is it bigger screen? What is your number one thing? 33% said, no, we want better battery life. Bigger screen was in second place with 23%, followed by faster processor, and then 12% wanted a better camera. I can't say I think that the iPhone has the worst battery life in the world, although I did just lose my iPhone over the weekend at a party and couldn't find it on Find My iPhone because the battery was dead. So when you think about it that way, sure, I'd like twice the battery. I'd like it to charge faster. I think that would almost be the real killer feature.
Do you use your iPad charger or use the iPhone charger that comes with it?
I use the iPhone charger.
If you use the iPad charger, it charges twice as fast.
Oh.
Whether. I don't know if that's also true or not.
Also, if you have a really good like a third party USB battery charger, they can also do quick charges. That's the kind that I have two copies of the exact same one in both of my bags to make sure that I can always just top it off real quick.
See this one here? This is 2 amps on the top, 1 amp on the bottom. So you can, you know, if something happens to not be, and this is made by some Chinese company. This one happens to be PowerGen, but there's a whole bunch of names for it. But you use that top one, and it taps off your iPhone in about an hour from zero.
Chad's got one too.
Warmer pick of the week.
I've got like six of them. They just
is that coincidental, or you and Alex have already talked about this?
I think it was a pick of the week, and I immediately bought it on Amazon. Yeah,
wow. They called each other this morning, Sarah.
Yeah, we. Right. Yeah, we're actually. If you look real closely, one second. Let me see if I can.
Our usual phone call. Let's hope Sarah.
We're also wearing the same shirt too.
Exactly.
You know.
Very close. I called Chad about that.
Oh, you guys.
What are you wearing?
Morphing into each other.
We just iMessage each other in the morning.
So, all right. Well, it sounds like I'm the one who has the least amount of good solutions for battery life. But I guess it's sort of the idea of the poll is sort of speaking to, sure, people might want a bigger screen, but it's not actually the thing that everyone's wanting. What they really want is just the
battery.
More convenience of battery life.
Battery. And phone. I mean, camera. Mm-hmm. Camera and battery, that's all I care about.
I mean, the camera's obviously, it can be improved, but it's quite nice.
It is. I want a half-inch chip in there. I just want a big half-inch chip, you know, with three times the size, you know. Sorry.
Like the Lumia 1020 lens.
Yeah. What I want is a real Xenon flash. And I'm hoping that some of the APIs that come out in iOS 8, I don't think Apple will ever decide to make a phone thicker in order to accommodate hardware for the camera or anything cool like that. But I'm hoping that the technologies that are in iOS 8 will let someone make a really nice camera sled for it that will have things like an integrated Xenon flash that can actually integrate with a custom app that has fine grain controls over exposure and stuff like that. But I did read the article about it. It did leave me wondering. how people are wired up to respond to a poll like that or a question like that, where I think that they're mostly thinking about the phone that they have today and what disappoints them about it. If you told them that, if you placed instead two different iPhones in front of them and gave them an option of a larger screen or a smaller screen, which one would they then take? I think that's a more relevant sort of way of going about it. And the other thing is that making it bigger does make more room for batteries. It does make force a larger and more power-hungry display. But of all the phones that I've been testing, some of the ones that have the best battery life are the ones with the bigger screen, simply because the circuitry for the actual phone stays the same, and there's lots and lots and lots of more room to pack that thing full of battery. And boy, does Nokia and other companies actually take advantage of that. So
yeah, that's
that's why I'm really looking forward to, if Apple does come up with two different sized phones, I'm really interested to see if Apple's going to release information about who's buying what, or if it's going to be one of the, oh, well, we're combined, we sold over 14 million phones this year, this quarter, without saying that, oh, well, the 5.1 has been outselling every other one out there. Or, yeah, we think that we did everything we intended to do by producing the 5.5-inch iPhone. We will need to update it next year.
Well, that's what they did with the 5C numbers. It made for a wonderful quarter, but the 5C was not necessarily such a great seller. It was all combined numbers.
You gotta work out the ASP and then do backwards math magic to try and figure out which one sold where.
I'm excited about a bigger phone. I understand that the 4-inch iPhone face at this point seems like a little phone. I'm so used to it though, and I was used to the one that was. That wasn't stretched out.
And I will say, I mean, I have bigger phone. And this is my Rwandan phone that I just use here. And then this is a Max. And then this is the HTC that I like the camera on. I like the short depth of field thing that it does. But I have to admit, when I'm typing, when I want to type quickly, I still want my iPhone. I just find it easier to get a hold of it. You know, so the screen real estate is nice when I'm watching something. I just don't watch a lot of my phones. And so that's what my iPad's for me. And so because I'm not watching a lot of stuff, I find that the smaller size actually works for me better.
Yeah, the interesting thing for me is that a lot of times these surveys are not put in any context because, I want a bigger battery. Well, so do I, but what price will you pay for that? Will you take a phone that's twice as thick, like the Razer Max line? And some people happily will do that. Some people want double the battery life in a phone half the size, which is not possible in current laws of physics. And battery remains one of the biggest problems. There's just very little advances. People are looking at graphene, they're looking at other options. But the battery, not only does it take a lot of space, but it's an insulator. So you have to ramp down the processor speed faster because it's keeping the heat higher in the phone. If they could fix that, we'd have fantastic devices. There's very little indication that that's going to be fixed anytime soon, though. So I think all these kinds of things are wonderful. I want a better camera. I want a bigger screen. You just have to start picking the ones that are really important to you and then realizing what the trade-offs are. Like, I want a much bigger lens with optical image stabilization. Well, they want Z-index. So now your phone, again, has to be much thicker. And if you're willing to have that, there are some phones that do that, but not everybody wants that trade-off.
I think it'd be more interesting to approach people who have switched from the iPhone to something else and then ask them, okay, did you buy one with a bigger screen or did you buy one that's pretty much the same size as the iPhone? So it's interesting to get this sort of data, but there really isn't any sort of a smoking gun on what people really want. I think most people, if they're sticking with a certain platform, they're generally happy with it. They just want what they have right now to work a little bit better than it does.
And Volta was interesting from Google. At Google I/O, they talked about Project Volta, which was their attempt to make Android, to do a lot of magic to make Android batteries go longer. And Apple doesn't have those kind of code names, but they have a lot of people working on getting every bit of battery life out of it. And that's probably what we're going to look forward to for now, is the bigger phone will have to pay a bigger penalty in terms of lighting up a bigger screen and using more LED and stuff. But the battery technology will once again get better at the same time.
Yeah, there are a lot of times I do thought experiments about if I really did have ultimate power over Apple, and I did have I also had the tyrannical seat of power at Apple, not the one that tries to get everybody going along, but the people who fear me and will take the stairs if they think that I'm going to be entering the elevator. I would love to tell the research group to, your mandate is design a phone, and it's not going to be not even 1 millimeter slimmer than a full 3/4 of a centimeter or whatever the current thickness of the iPhone 5S is, add 50% to that. Now do whatever to exploit that extra thickness however you want, and let me see what you come up with. Because I just have a feeling that if Apple lost this idea that phones should be as skinny as possible so that when you put them in the big, fat, ugly rubber bumper case, you know, you can think that, well, inside all this rubber, it's a very thin phone. I imagine they could do wonderful things with camera. They could do wonderful things with battery. They could even do wonderful things with CPU. They could do wonderful things about making their phone weatherproof and a little bit more dust resistant. I often wonder exactly how expensive that super slim design is and whether or not that's a price that's still worth paying.
If you've got a larger iPhone, let's just say that we're starting to get almost into Falbit territory with the new iPhones that come out. Does Apple care that it could cannibalize iPad sales? I'm thinking no.
No.
They want to cannibalize. They have never been shy about cannibalizing their own thing. That's been one of their greatest strengths, is they've never tried to soak every penny out of everything they could. Like, they never tried to soak the iPod lineup. They're happy for the iPod Touch to get cannibalized by the iPad Mini and by the iPhone 5C and 5S. Same with the Mac and the iPad. They just want to make sure it's not another company that's cannibalizing them. So if they can take existing market share and get people onto new devices, that's fine. They can take it away. So right now, Apple sells most of their premium phones in the world. The other premium phones are larger screen devices. The people who can't get iOS on a device size of their choice. By offering an iPad that's a bigger size, maybe they'll lose a couple of iPad sales, but they have a chance at going after the sales of people who are now buying Samsung or Nokia or HTC devices. And I think to them, that's a price they'll pay every day.
That could be something to keep an eye on, though, as part of as we're trying to guess if Apple is changing a lot of things we always have known and assumed about Apple have been changing as it evolves into the 2014, 2015 version of the company. One of the classical observations has always been that Apple wants a very, very thin price list. They don't want people to come in and have any doubts about what it is they came in to get. Whereas HP and Samsung, they'll make a million different tablets, a million different devices, and without a whole lot of clarity between why they should get the 13.5-inch notebook versus the 14.2-inch notebook that has the Celeron processor but has the Celeron A processor, all this sort of stuff. It will be interesting because usually they have absolutely no qualms about cannibalizing their own sales, but usually it's because they have decided that they've decided that this product is going to be dead anyway. It's going to be irrelevant in 2 or 3 years, and they'd much rather have you replace this irrelevant device with a new, more relevant Apple device. So, although we are speaking of a larger and a smaller phone as though they're announced products, of course they're not. They're just rumors. They're very good rumors, but they're just rumors at this point. It'll be interesting to watch this and see that Apple is now saying that we will give you a much larger phone that's still slightly smaller than a tablet, and then we'll also give you a tablet that's larger than the phone, and this tablet will also be slightly smaller than this other tablet above it. And by the way, please don't listen to rumors that we're creating another tablet that's slightly larger than the larger tablet. So it's not something I'm used to seeing. And if I had resistance a few months ago to the idea of Apple coming out with two larger screen phones, it is because of that old style thinking that Apple would not give you a choice between, let's say, a 5.5-inch and a 4.8-inch phone unless they had a really good explanation for what the difference between those two are going to be. Now I'm not quite so sure.
All right. Good explanation. Does anybody have ideas on which one they would choose if, again, we have, let's say we have a 4.7 and a 5.3-inch iPhone, and you're probably not going to get both of them?
I'd probably get both. I have to review them.
Oh, sorry. outside of having to review both of them, the one that I would buy would have to be the larger one, chiefly because I don't spend a whole lot of time like talking on this phone. And because I'm a big beefy He-Man, I have these big pockets and I have no problem like putting this Pop-Tart sized phone into a pocket somewhere. And I often find myself sort of stumbling between wanting to have an iPad with me and not caring, because so many times I'm doing so much reading and so much research and maybe a little bit of work, but not enough to justify taking a big screen device with me. So I would be all over 5.5-inch device. When I laughed at the that larger size Lumia phone, when it first came in. But boy, you have that around for a couple of weeks and you start to realize what a nice little form factor it is, to say nothing of the idea of what Apple could do with a larger device with a larger camera in it. Because the only really major sacrifice in switching to Android for me has been losing that great iPhone camera. So if they're able to say that, oh, by the way, we put in a larger sensor here, and now we have room for a flash in here, and also you have this larger view screen that lets you almost see a preview of a 4x6 inch print as you're taking the picture. Oh boy, would that be nifty!
Alex, you've already got a bit of a phone collection with you. What do you think about size?
You know, I think that I won't know until I actually play with them. I know that for me, again, you know, like for instance, between the HTC and the iPhone, I still find the smaller version smaller. And the problem is I'm not really using the screen that often for its size. You know, I'm using it to get information out. And so I think that that's the issue for me, is that I may not be a typical use case. I just don't watch a lot of videos on it. I don't look at a lot of things that I really care how big the screen is. I do like the fact that the phone is smaller. If I thought that the screen size would give me more battery life, I'd be tempted to get a bigger one. because I think my iPhone, if I don't charge it, will be dead by noon, typically.
Well,
it's interesting.
Go ahead, Renee.
Oh, I was just going to say that a lot of my thoughts on this are based on the assumption that the phones will be identical, and it's just going to be a matter of choosing the size, like with the iPad mini Retina and the iPad Air today. But it's quite possible that because the 5.5-inch iPhone is bigger, maybe to Andy's point, they could add a better camera to it, or could have significantly better battery life, or could have some other feature that the smaller iPhone's missing. Or I don't know how they're going to stage the features. So the features will, I'm sure, play a factor in my decision and maybe a lot of people's decisions. Yeah.
Or what if the 5.5 is the smallest iOS device that can run two applications side by side?
Or also, I forget, Ben Beharin made the point that the big phones right now do not sell very well in North America. The Galaxy Notes sell abysmally in North America, but they sell incredibly well in emerging markets. But those emerging markets want really cheap phones. So if it's an iPhone 6C, that's the bigger phone because that's the market it's going to sell in, I would go for the 4.7, because that would be the premium device. So it really depends on how they lay this stuff out.
It's also, it's not so much what you're used to, I think. I mean, I remember back in the day when I had a BlackBerry Pearl, it was awesome because it could go into even sort of a tight jean pocket and wouldn't really, it wouldn't hinder me at all. You know, the iPhone 5S is perfectly fine for me. I don't sit there looking at it thinking, I wish this was bigger. But yeah, I think if there was a little bit more screen real estate, I might use an app like Flipboard a lot more often on my iPhone, which I find not really very fun at all on my iPad. I think it's delightful. So there is an issue of screen real estate.
Which is funny because I use Flipboard on 99% of the time on my iPhone, and specifically because I'm usually standing in some line or and so the thing is having just one hand on, I find that the iPad version is too big. So it doesn't, I can kind of get through the same information quickly. So it definitely is going to be an interesting, Apple giving people choice is definitely going to be an interesting model.
How dare they?
Yeah, I think it would be a shame if they took the standard sized iPhone screen off the market entirely, because, like Sarah said, I mean, it's nice to have a phone that is manageable and pocketable for a wide range of pockets. I mean, I make fun of my tactical cargo pants, where I can literally put a 9.7 inch iPad in my back pocket if I have to, and I have. But really, there are people that really do need something that's a lot more manageable, that is easier to one hand than anything else. I mean, the fact that I'm excited about having a 5.5 inch screen on my car dashboard and being able to hit targets with my finger a lot more accurately and be able to see data with just a glance, as opposed to having to go in like this, which is what I kind of have to do with when I've got the iPhone 5 there, doesn't mean that works for everybody. So it's going to be interesting to see what kind of bets Apple chooses to cover with screen size.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's take a moment to thank our second sponsor, that is Gazelle, for this episode of Mac Break Weekly. We're talking about new iPhones. They're coming. We don't know exactly what's going to happen, but we can safely say before long, we're going to have a whole new range of devices, and that might mean that your trusty little whatever you've got right now is just not working for you anymore, and you've got some options. You can sort of throw it in a junk drawer. You can, well, that's pretty much your only option, right? Because how many phones you really need. Or you can try to get some money back for that gadget, not just an iPhone, but, you know, a used iPhone, an iPad, other smartphone with Gazelle. Gazelle is in the business of buying your used gadgets from you and giving you a really good chunk of change in return. What you can do is actually go to Gazelle, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com, and let Gazelle know, all right, well, these are the devices that I have. Maybe it's one, maybe it's five. Just let Gazelle know, all right, this is the condition that it's in. Here's what my carrier was, so on and so forth. Even if you got a broken iPhone, they will buy those back. So don't worry if it's not in the best condition possible. But, you know, be honest about how you're going to send it to them. And then Gazelle says, all right, if that's all fine and good, here's what we're going to give you. And that price is locked in for 30 days, which is nice because it gives you time to get your new device, set it up, wipe your data, whatever you need to do. By the way, Gazelle will wipe your data for free if for whatever reason that's not something that you can do or have time for. Now, the benefits of Gazelle is you get paid in cash. The payment's fast, within just a few days of Gazelle receiving your item or items. And again, there's that risk-free feeling because those offers are locked in. They're good for 30 days. So you've got time to get what you need in order once you've figured out what you're going to get from Gazelle. Company has paid over $100 million to over 700,000 customers. It's easy. The shipping is free. The process is fast. You can check out an iPhone 5 or, you know, a fourth-gen Apple iPad or iPad Mini or a Samsung Galaxy S3, all sorts of stuff Gazelle will buy back from you. So what is your iPhone or other gadget worth? Do you know? You should take a moment and just go to gazelle.com and find out what you'll get back. And, of course, you can put that towards your new gadget, what you actually really want. Get your money, and then you can upgrade your life. Do it now because, again, those gadgets will lose value the longer you wait. They're not getting more valuable. They're getting less valuable. Gazelle.com. And thanks so much to Gazelle for sponsoring this episode of Mac Break Weekly. Okay, do we get into our tips of the week? And if so, you guys will have to, is there some sort of like a pecking order with tips? Who goes first? Do I choose? Do you all just talk at
you
once and figure out who's
you
loudest?
Start throwing it away. You all start right. Throwing it out there.
All right, well, let's go right to left. Renee, what is your pick of the week?
So my pick of the week is Slack. I used to use Campfire with everyone at iMore to just help, you know, be our virtual office and just keep us communicating during the day. But Campfire, it's just not getting the attention that it once got. You know, the writing on the wall is clear. It's not going to continue that much longer, I don't think, anyway. So we had the choice of looking at HipChat and looking at Slack, and we ended up going with Slack because it has a lot of great features. It provides the same sort of little virtual office rooms as something like Campfire or something like HipChat. You can do direct messages as well. You can embed images. But it's got a lot of really great integration. So, for example, we use Trello for a lot of our planning, and you can integrate Trello into this so that when cards are moved or updated or otherwise, you know, change their information, it pops right into the stream inside of Slack. You can do that with Twitter feeds. You can do that with just tons and tons of things. It also is very well organized, and it's kind of cute. It's kind of friendly looking. And they have mobile apps. And the best thing is those mobile apps really work. Anyone who's ever used Skype on mobile knows that it's not a given that a mobile app for communication is going to work anything close to effectively. But so far, I've been using Slack for a week, maybe 2 weeks now, and it's just been tremendous. We've moved over with almost no hassle. We got up and running. I think within a couple hours, we had 30, maybe 50 people transitioned. And we've just been using it since, and it's gotten to the point where I haven't opened Campfire in, you know, since that day, and I keep forgetting to open Skype now because I just find no real need for it. So if you're looking for this kind of thing, if you're running a virtual office or you have, you know, a club or a group or anything that would benefit from virtual communications in this style, I think Slack is a great choice.
Alex, your tip of the week?
So I'm always playing with photos, and photo editing. And one of the ones that I've started to play with that I really like a lot, and it's just another one that I'm playing with. And there's all these other ones, but have you played with Lightly at all? So it's Lightly, L-I-T-E-L-Y. And you take your photos, and of course it's got a couple filters here, and you can shop for other presets. of course, it's, you know, that's how they make their money. But the, even the ones that they have here, what I really like about it is you, you know, you find one there and then you can just simply drag looking at the photo. You can adjust the effect. You can open up, you know, everything from exposure to sharpen to vibrance and, you know, kind of play with how that effect is going to, you know, to work. It's one of many other apps that you could do this with. But right now it's the one that I'm really enjoying. It's just a, it's a fun little app as far as, you know, kind of cutting things and very, I don't know, for me, I feel like I get this kind of interesting mix of control and fluidity that, that I haven't really seen as much with the other apps where it just feels very, I feel like I'm doing things very quickly with it that I enjoy. So it is, I think it's free, so it doesn't, you know, there's not a lot of commitment there. Of course, you know, the way they make their money is you can, you know, shop for presets, other looks that you might want, which are also not very expensive and they are very cool. So so there's a lot of, you know, other things that you could add to it. You'll end up spending a whole $6, I think, on a slew of presets that you can play with. But there's, again, there's something about the speed and the control mixed together. There's a lot of apps that give you one or the other more effectively, but I think this is a very nice mix of the two of them and definitely worth trying for nothing. And that is Light Lean.
This is nice. I'm I just loaded a picture of me and my friend's new baby that was taken last night. And at first glance, it kind of reminds me of ViscoCam, VSCOCam.
Yep.
But it's, it does seem a little bit more intuitive. Maybe not quite so fully featured. Ooh, sorry, Chad. But yeah, we've got exposure here. We've got, yeah, sharpening tools, vibrance, which is all the rage these days. And yeah, it's, this is real nice. These are some presets here. In fact, it really reminds me of ViscoCam in a way. Just, yeah, less to buy right off the top. Andy, have you, are you familiar with Lightly?
I haven't used Lightly, but I'm familiar with ViscoCam. But if you're saying that it reminds you of that, that's a pretty good compliment.
Yeah. I think the design maybe more than anything else. But yeah, you've got, if you go into the area, the shopping area, we're on the starter here, which gives you 9 presets. But then, yeah, you can go a little nuts. Origins, Venice. And this seems to be kind of the trend now is the photo apps will say, well, we'll just give you a few because we know that not everybody goes crazy for filters. But if you do, then this free app then becomes, you know, a $2 app, which is fine. Yeah. Like, you know, maybe I want all of those black and white.
With iOS 8, those will be available to you in other apps now as well.
Which is great. I know. Yeah.
I do have to remind myself that just because I'm a hobbyist photographer doesn't mean that people share the way that I interact with photos. That I think most people are just like you, Sarah, where they do all their image editing on the phone itself, and they then just shoot it out from the phone directly. And so if I'm hoping for aperture-like controls where I can say, gee, I like that green, but I remember the green being not quite so yellowish. I think it was a little bit more bluish. I want to adjust just that green. I think most people just want to look through a menu of preset filters and say, ooh, that looks nice. Great. Let's post that one.
Well, Andy, what is your pick of the week?
Mine's a really cool little iPhone app called Rookies that lets you, lets you design baseball cards. There are a lot of apps that are kind of like this and even apps in this sort of category where it says, oh, well, you get to make postcards and bumper stickers. And you say, oh, great. So does it look just like a baseball card? No, basically we take your picture and then we add a rounded border to it and put a quote team name in Times New Roman. No, that doesn't look like a baseball card. But they actually have about a dozen different card designs that will remind you of what baseball cards are supposed to look like. I've got Tim Cook here. I got Craig Federighi. I got these in the same. wrong keyboard. There you go. This Craig Federighi. Those are both of the same style. You can do front and back. So if you want to do statistics, you can do that. Here's another format. If you want to do horizontal format, there's our 214 team baseball card. And you can edit all this stuff. It really looks like a well-designed thing. And here's the other cool thing about it. It's a free app. There are no in-app purchases. You don't like. It doesn't cost you $2 to get the other version of what you like. The way they make their money is that you can then order. Yeah, you can see that screen right there. You can order these printed up as real wax package baseball cards, where everything but the gum, they say, where it'll be printed on the same sort of like cardboard. It'll be wrapped in wax packaging, and it will ship to you as these like real looking baseball cards. That's, I think that's why they put so much work into the design of these things. So,
you know,
but even if, as a free download and something you can just simply spit these out into new images into your camera roll that you can then do whatever you want with and repurpose, definitely worth the download. And I'm pretty sure that at some point in life, I will say, okay, I want to see what that looks like as a real baseball card. And then maybe I'll do something clever for Christmas, like have Christmas baseball cards I'll send to people. You never know.
That's terrific.
How much does the packs cost?
I don't even know. I was so excited about making baseball. I basically went through every single photo in my photo library on my iPhone. Say, oh, that's looking good. Oh, we'll do a squirrel baseball team of baseball cards. I don't think it's prohibitive though. It's not crazy stupid.
You know, and I know that this is not very imaginative, but I could totally see doing this for a little league team. So if you're a parent, you'd be the star of the show. I'm just saying, you know, and all the parents would chip in for this. So if you made the little pack that was the little league team, I know when I was a kid on Little League, that would have been pretty awesome.
Well, I mean, how exciting is it for a kid to have like a real baseball card? I'm not sure if kids. Okay, let me see. Buy this card. Tap cards to add them to your pack. Okay, let's.
How much are they per card?
I'm trying to figure out that right now.
Hurry up, Andy. We're impatient.
Sorry, I did do my work.
It's okay. I'm just organizing my photography app. So
one 20 custom cards is $12.99 with shipping. It's $15.99. So that'll be one pack of 20. So that's if you're used to like for a lot of your friends say I'll buy them a CD. Like, okay, that's one CD worth, and they can put that in the cards of the folks.
Family
that
baseball cards. Ugh, I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. I'm so doing this.
I think it's a good idea.
Yeah. I also like the fact that you read the story of this product on the site. They said that they really did want to include like really bad stale gum in every pack too, but the FDA would not let them do that. One piece of advice though. I kept looking back onto the iTunes store to find this. If you do a search for rookies and rookies baseball cards, you will find everything but this app. So my tip is to go to rookiesapp.com, rookiesapp.com, and that'll take you right to the product page and the download link.
I need to know why, if you have the exact name of the app, and often you even add the developer name or company name into the search fields. You still have to go to that company's website click the App Store.
Search is hard.
I know, because Apple is not Google.
Well, can they be? Because
I have an alternative theory.
Okay.
Tim's been CEO for like 5 or 6 years, but he's still not quite done firing people yet. I don't want to be mean, but this is the sort of thing where you ever have these problems with the computer where you find yourself talking to the computer because you're out of options. You're saying, look, I'm giving you the name of the app. What else could I do but like manually look through every single thing and say, here is a picture of what I want. Like, oh, goodness.
It's like something's broken. Steak. Would you like lamb chops and chicken? No, steak. Does that mean fish? Steak, you know.
It turns you into Bill Cosby. You're like, give me that. No, not exactly that. What I type, just give me that.
Son, was your head with you all day today?
Yeah, I feel like I got to an iTunes melting point when I was trying to find the Yo app, which I assume we've all talked about on MacBreak already as the dumbest app that's ever been made. And I couldn't find it because in the App Store it's Yo period with a punctuation. It took me a million years and I had to go find it from some article.
I'm trying to get an app, not the Babel fish.
Right.
I shouldn't feel a sense of achievement once I actually find something on the App Store.
Exactly. Ugh. Well, all right. So I know Alex had Lightly, which is looks to be a very promising photography app, and I don't exactly have a specific tip, but I thought, well, since we're on the photography train and since I have cute photos at the ready of my friend's baby, I would just let you guys know what this is just sort of like my default. If I want a photo to look better and it's already a pretty good photo, the process that I go through it. I mean, I've got like 45 photography apps. I'm all about photography apps. So I just sort of collect them. However, I do feel like what has worked well for me is a combination of opening the photo in Snapseed. Now, Snapseed is a Google product, used to be independent. Let's go ahead and we'll open up this picture of my friend's little new son, Milo. Aww. We'll go ahead and say, okay, we'll use it. You know, it's a cute picture, right? Now, Snapseed does a lot of stuff, but I find, in general, that a combination of a little automatic, which adds a bit of contrast, so I go ahead and say, okay, let's go ahead and process this. Then tuning image, which then I take to the ambiance. Now, of course, in Snapseed, the UI can be a little off-putting to people at first, but once you get the hang of it, there's features on every level here. But you've got brightness and ambiance and contrast and saturation. But ambiance specifically is like adding just a little HDR light. So if I go ahead and say, all right, let's go ahead and bring the ambiance up to, let's go to about 40 on this guy. And of course, I can see my before and after here. Oh, yeah, it's kind of hard to see on some of these cameras, but I guarantee you it makes his skin tone look a little bit nicer. Go ahead and say yes. Then at this point, I saved my photo library. See, this is why I spend too much time on my iPhone and I need a better hobby. But then what I do is I open it up in ViscoCam because it's already been saved and updated a pretty good amount. Go ahead and open that here. Then I go into my presets because I've bought them all. And then I move down to the, I think it's G, right? These are my portrait section. Yeah, so G1 and G2, these are ViscoCam presets that I have paid for. I go ahead and say, all right, let's go ahead and take some of this. So this is if there was no filter at all. Let's just kind of clean this up. It's kind of just sort of make this a little bit more ethereal and angelic. Pretty happy with that guy.
How could a baby be more angelic than that?
With a filter, Andy, with a filter. And then you go ahead and save the camera roll, and then usually at that point I send it to Instagram and hope I get as many likes as possible. So that's.
I always say it's going to save you so much time.
I hope so, because this is extremely time-consuming. I mean, that is literally the process that I go through with pretty much all pictures, and then I decide if I want to take it into some other app beyond that point. But that's time consuming. I mean, I've gotten pretty good at it at this point, but that is, it's one of those like photo layering options that I feel like gives me a better result than any one photo app can do on its own. Then again, haven't played around too much with Lightly, so it would be nice to have a little bit more of like a one touch option or an if this then that for my process.
Automator for photos.
Exactly. That would be fun too. Well, is there anything that we have not discussed on this episode of MacBreak Weekly that you guys were hoping I would bring up that we need to discuss before we sign off? Now
your
is the time.
Amazing hosting skills, Sarah.
What's that?
Yes,
your amazing hosting skills.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
You did so well.
Well, thank you. That's very. You know, I mean, I like the topic, so I'm glad that I didn't totally crash and burn on this MacBreak Weekly. But no, thanks everybody for being here. Of course, Andy Anatko. Andy, do you have, besides watching USA beat Belgium in just a few minutes in the World Cup, anything super exciting going on before you all meet again for MacBreak Weekly next week?
A couple of really long columns that have been a couple of weeks in progress. So my follow-up to, believe it or not, WWDC's keynote and news is coming up. Also, my wrap-up of Google I.O. is coming up. As always, there's the first reaction when you stop watching the live feed. And then there's like, okay, let's talk to this guy. Let's talk to this lady. Let's go onto this message board and make sure that I understand things I actually think I understand. And also, let's get news from people who have been to all of these different sessions. And as usual, like as excited as you are by keynote, it's like, oh, they actually showed off even better things in the little sessions. So I've got a lot of editing ahead of me, but go to suntimes.com. You'll be able to get that stuff, or go to anatko.com and check out my bloggy stuff and my photo stuff.
Excellent. Alex Lindsay is coming to us live from Rwanda, where he and the PixelCorps team are doing a lot of good work. Alex, how long are you going to be there?
I am here until Saturday night. Oh, I got dark all of a sudden. Hold on one second. Skype really stinks. Anyway, so I'm here until Saturday night. Although I may post a video if it's not too gory. We are going to eat a goat, not alive, but it will start alive, and then it will end up on the table on Saturday.
I'd like to clarify that.
I told them I'm getting the goat, but I said I'm getting the goat, but I want to film the whole process, because I was like, did the goat start alive? And they said all goats start alive, and I was like, well, that's true. So I'm gonna, you know, film the process and decide how much of it I let everyone else see, because some of it might be a little gory. But it will start with a goat and then end up with dinner, and then the that might be 30 seconds long, you know, without a lot to it anyway. But then I get back next week. I've got a bunch of events, so I'm kind of traveling around. But also I'd love to get people's feedback. We just did our first Final Cut virtual user group last week, I believe, last week or the week before. And it is, you can find it on my, if you follow me on Twitter, you'll find it there. And I may get darker again because Skype, you know, stinks. We already talked about that. FC VUG. So Final Cut Virtual User Group -1. If you go to bit.ly, that's bit.ly FC VUG -1. And it's on YouTube as well in the PixelCore site. But you can see the entire like result of our question engine system that's there as well. If you go to the actual URL, and you can find it on my Twitter feed, Alex Lindsay. We kind of are experimenting with this idea of this discussion between experts, and where people can ask questions in real time. And these experts, like some of the best Final Cut users in my opinion, in the world. I just sat there and just kind of ran the conversation and asked stupid questions. But if you look down the side, like for instance, go ahead and hit play there for a second. You can turn the audio down. But so if you watch that though, watch this. If you click on one of those questions on the side, watch this. It'll just take you right to that question. So anyway, if you want to see what discussion was happening there, you can kind of go through the different questions. And all those questions were questions that came in from, from people who were viewing it. So the idea was to kind of create a new format for user groups. And, it's not perfect. We're in the midst of creating something new and training guys and doing it. So we'd love to get your feedback on it. So definitely take a look at it and let us know what you think.
Excellent. Renee Ritchie celebrating Canada Day, as well as prolifically contributing to not only the show, but everything Apple for iMore and beyond. What's new over the next week? What can we expect from you, Renee?
I'm doing a series called iOS 8 Explained, where I try to take everything and just, you know, put it into layman's terms. And there's a lot of stuff announced. So if you go to imore.com/iOS8, iOS-8, you'll see all of that. What I'm really excited about, though, is we have the final episode of our Nitin Ganatra trilogy on the Debug podcast tomorrow. He was director of iOS apps at Apple. Last week, we covered the Purple Project all the way to the launch of the original iPhone. And this last part, we talk about all the decisions made from the iPhone to the iPad, like why there was no MMS, why there was no cut and paste, how they scaled apps to go to the iPad size. So if, like me, you consider the advent of the iPhone one of the biggest cultural events of our last decade, at least in technology, then this is a guy who was at those table making those decisions. And I find that endlessly fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, good gets. And thanks to all of you for joining us. Andy Anatko, Alex Lindsay, Renee Ritchie, thanks so much for being with me. Leo Laporte will be back in the big chair next week for episode 410. Until then, we're...
Get back to work because break time's over.
Until then, get back to work because break time's over.